Hey, everybody, this is Tom Salami of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. Got a bit of a short episode for you this time around. I've spoke with Leanne Teplitsky. Leanne's been on the podcast before. She previously had been with Zimmer Biomet. Now she's with a very cool company called Artidrone, which is a device or system that uses both digital twin technology and magnetic lead catheters, kind of in a stereotaxis surgical robotic sort of fashion, to make it easier to clear clots in the brain and the neurovascular system. So it's a really, I think, a unique story, unique approach, another way of finding a way to get more care, the right care to people who have suffered strokes and to get it to them in time to really make a difference. So it's a great MedTech story. Leanne's got a great story as well, and we'll dive into that at first. No new markers, new makers this week. We're in Minnesota. I was at Medical Alley's annual event last night. Had a really great time. Met so many fantastic folks. And Chris and I are on the road today, the day I'm recording this. We'll be visiting some of the sites in Minnesota and recording some videos for Device Talks Minnesota and some other projects. So keeping it short and tight this time around, but I know you'll enjoy this conversation with Leanne Teplitsky. Before I let you go, we'll be resuming Device Talks Tuesdays on Tuesday. Our good friends at Nelson Labs, who always put on a great show, will be giving a presentation on updates to ISO 10993-1, focus on foreseeable misuse. So it's an important conversation. I'm sure you'll want to be part of that. Go to devicetalks.com to register. Of course, you can you register for free. You can watch it live or you can watch it on demand. It's really up to you. Just go to devicetalks.com to register. And of course, we'd love to see you at Device Talks Minnesota. It's happening on June 11th. That is at the McNamara Alumni Center. It's going to be a great day of conversations around new technologies, strategies, new markets. Got a lot of great companies represented both in and outside the Twin Cities. So really happy to have this program assembled and ready for your enjoyment. Lots of great numbers on the registration side. This, unlike our other meetings, we do have a cap on it. So if you're planning to attend, please don't wait too long. And you can use the code DTWeekly25 to save yourself 25%. Off the price of registration. Of course, we love to give our podcast listeners a little gift for being loyal listeners. So use DT Weekly 25 when you register for Device Talks Minnesota. And finally, we've opened registration also for Device Talks West. That's happening on October 15th and 16th. We're expanding that program and agenda. More details on that later, but we'd love to see you at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. All right, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo!
Well, Leanne Teplitsky, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Tom. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you back and learn about your new startup that you're leading, or the startup that you've recently taken the helm of, Artidrone. We love surgical robotics here. We love neurovascular treatments. So this is right in our sweet spot. Really excited.
Awesome.
So folks can find your previous visit to the podcast a few years ago, but we can also just be kind and bring them up to speed a bit on your path into medtech. If I recall, your parents were in healthcare. You considered being a doctor, but dissuaded yourself of that rather quickly and decided to look at technology instead. How did that all come to be?
Very good memory, Tom. I'm impressed. Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, I really thought I was going to go into medicine, and you know, I was taking pre-med classes at school, and I just, you know, my, like I was saying in the previous podcast, my mom was a pharmacist and working at the cancer clinic. And then I started doing some sort of informal informational interviews on what it would be like to be a doctor with some physicians. And I just honestly sort of felt that I couldn't be on that front line and like talking and with the patients every day, especially, you know, coming in the cancer clinic. This is back in the days when chemotherapy was so miserable and patients were really suffering and outcomes were not that good. And then I was like, I don't know that I can have those daily conversations and like really be right there, but I still really want to play in this space. And so, I had a friend that was in electrical engineering and found out kind of what that was all about in this biomedical engineering thing and thought, you know what, I can do the technology behind medicine and maybe even have a broader impact than just like one patient at a time. And so I made the transition over. We didn't have biomedical engineering at the time. And so like I said, that didn't exist at the time, at least at my school. And so when I talked about the kinds of things I wanted to do, they encouraged me to go into electrical engineering. And so that's what I did. And when I graduated, you know, half of my class, I graduated from the University of Saskatchewan. So I was in Canada and half of my class went to work on BlackBerry and in like the telecom industry. Yeah, I'm dating myself, but way, way long ago in the sort of went east and the rest went a little bit west and into oil because that was also really big in the province next to me. And I was like, no way. I really am dedicated to working in medicine and got my dream job, dream location down in Sunnyvale, California.
Oh, for you.
Medical. I know. It was, I'm not joking. And working on, you know, pacemaker and implantable fibrillator design. And so that was it for me. You know, that my, I was all in at that point and, you know, I really haven't looked back since.
Well, number one, I miss my BlackBerry, so people can age me all they want, but I love my little QWERTY keyboard. So there, and the movie was excellent, by the way. Number two, I always thought mechanical engineering was kind of the path for biomedical engineering. Is it electrical engineering? That's the more common path, or is it there really no preference?
You know, I think that there's different ways that you can get into it. So the electrical for me, that was the one that was encouraged. And I'm not sure I thought much about it at the time. I was like, okay, you know, okay, someone told me, great. You know, as it turned out, that was way up my alley. So I think mechanical engineering ends up being like sort of more biomechanics. It depends which arm you want to go to. And I ended up, you know, loving electrical engineering and then was working on the electrical systems of the body, right? So electricity in the heart. Yep. And so that ended up working out really well for me.
That makes perfect sense. So what was your first role there in Sunnyvale?
I was a hardware design engineer. And working on, you know, I was really sitting in front of a computer all day, every day, working on timing diagrams, you know, for the different algorithms that go into a pacemaker or an implantable defibrillator. Hardcore engineering to start.
That's an exciting space. And obviously one that's getting with pulse field ablation and everything, it's become a really remarkably innovative and diverse in its therapies. Do you still have a soft spot for
Oh, yeah. I mean, I spent, you know, over 20 years of my career really in that space with St. Jude. And then St. Jude was acquired by Abbott. And so worked in cardiac arrhythmias with pacemakers, implantable defibrillators. A large majority of my time was in electrophysiology. So ablation catheters, you know, all the imaging and diagnostics that went along with that. So absolutely a sweet spot for cardiovascular med tech. I also, you know, it was really fun. I had the opportunity to work in heart failure as well and work in just regular cardiovascular medicine, I guess, with OCT, FFR, stent placement, things like that, TAVI. So across the board, a lot of cardiovascular in those 20 years in a variety of different roles, but I, you know, loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And you were involved in that field right through the acquisition by Abbott, and you were with Abbott until February 2019. So
correct.
That's in your blood.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
I did not remember that. I looked at your LinkedIn profile, so I've done it.
Yeah, through just about to the end of 2019. That's right.
And when we spoke last, you had moved over to robotics technology and data solutions at Zimmer Biomet. And I know we covered this in the previous conversation as well. But what does it take for one to leave a field where they have 20 years of experience and really know it and love it and can probably do it in their whatever they need to do in their sleep? What leads them to sort of move into a new space? And how do you assess those opportunities?
Yeah, you know, I've taken a lot of leaps of faith in my career, I feel like. So even within St. Jude and then Abbott, you know, I was really fortunate to be given the opportunity to jump from, you know, hardcore engineering over to the business side with marketing and market development and, you know, really allow, you know, a broad portfolio of, I'll say, skills, but applying to your point in, you know, sort of cardiovascular med tech. So when I had the opportunity to join ZB and still really look at technology and introducing new technologies, but then in a different space, I just, I had to jump at it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool opportunity where, again, in my career, I feel like that theme has been bringing new technologies to market, but that really can elevate or change the standard of care. And that's the exact spot that ZB was in with kind of this ZB Edge portfolio, which when I started, ZB Edge as a name didn't even exist, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, they had a couple of groups that were working in, one in robotics and one in digital health, and this opportunity to figure out, how do you bring that together? How do you integrate the data? How do you build a digital health platform and collect these objective measures of data pre, intra, post-operative? You know, we talked a lot about that the last time I spoke with you. And so that having that kind of an opportunity to really build something is the main reason that I made the switch. And still knowing that you could apply a lot of the skills that you had and that knowledge you have over into a different field.
So again, when you're moving into a new space, and I just love to sort of unpack these critical moments in a career. When you're, pretend you're advising a mentee to take a new opportunity, how much do you seek out in new opportunities? Do you want the entire thing to be, or the majority of the opportunity to be something, a new skill set, a new area, a new challenge? Or is there a percentage in your mind, you know, obviously not an exact number, of familiar territory that you need to be standing on when doing a new space, moving into a new space? How do you, again, assess that next step?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Tom, that I haven't thought about for sure on the percentage standpoint, but I'm always looking for things where I can learn something new, but build on something that I've done before.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you broaden your perspective, where you broaden the perspective, right? You can think about it in different ways. So is it the same market, but a totally new crazy technology you might be having, you know, introducing into that space? Mm-hmm. Or is it a new market with sort of similar technology profile? Or is it, you know, how can you continue to learn and evolve, but still have some kind of a foundation? So the foundation may come from different places, but can you continue to merge on that? Because I think that's also, even as a candidate, when someone's looking to evaluate you, you know, what are you bringing that adds value to that new organization? And so really thinking about what value am I bringing that maybe from a past history or past experience? And then what am I going to gain from this experience as well? And how do those merge together as you go forward?
Oh, that's great. It's a nice setup for our move into your role at Artidrone, because you do have some familiar technologies here, but you're moving into a new clinical space, brand new for you, right? You haven't done neurovascular.
I have not done neurovascular. I've done a little bit in neuromodulation in my time at St. Jude, but definitely not neurovascular. Not like this, that's for sure.
So introduce our listeners to Artidrone.
So Artidrone is a company where we're really trying to give the best chance to every stroke patient. And so the background here is that stroke is the second leading cause of death and the third leading cause of long-term disability worldwide. And despite the severe burden of ischemic stroke, which is like 11 million patients a year globally, there's really limited opportunity and access to life-saving treatment. So the standard of care today is called mechanical thrombectomy, and it's done manually, right? So someone, an interventional neuroradiologist, or basically expert hands at an expert center, has to go in with mechanical tools and navigate all the way to where the stroke is in your brain, which is a blood clot in the brain, right? These ischemic strokes, and be able to access that stroke, that clot, attach to it in some way, and then pull it back out of the vasculature. And so the really big unmet need here is just the access, right? People don't have access to that. Actually, only 5% of people worldwide who could benefit from mechanical thrombectomy actually have access to the technology and the treatment, which is crazy, because it's nuts. And I didn't know those stats coming into this when I started thinking about making this move. And I was just blown away at how awful that was. You know, I started looking everywhere I travel. Is there access? Like, you know, what if I have a stroke? What if my parents have a stroke? What if someone I know, can they get to someone and to a center that can perform this kind of treatment? And the bottom line is, most of the time, the answer is no,
right?
Like, which right. is really crazy. Even here in the US, it's less than 30% of people that could benefit. And if you don't have access, like we were talking about before, it's death or severe disability in these kinds mm-hmm. of strokes. And so, I mean, it's a really crazy life-changing event that could come out and be extremely successful if you can just have access to pull that clot out. And so that's really the idea behind Artijone. So Artijone, that's the name of the company. It really is a drone for the arteries. And so the idea, yeah, it works. The idea behind it is that you can give many more hands, not just the super experts that take years and years and years to be able to perform this procedure, to give way more people access by allowing the interventionalists, whoever that may be, if they can get to the carotid artery. Once you get to the carotid artery, what Artijone does is we've got a robot called Sasha that you then essentially just push a button, and the micro robot then navigates its way into where the clot position is. It grabs a hold of the clot and essentially aspirates it and pulls it back out. And you just get back to that carotid, and then manually you can pull it back out again. So you can imagine now all of the different centers that have access to someone, an interventionalist of some sort, interventional cardiologist or otherwise, that uh-huh. can get you to the carotid artery. And then now it's basically hands off and we do the work. And so we really think that this is an opportunity to democratize this procedure, to get into the level 2 stroke centers, to get into the cardiac care centers potentially, but just have access to so many more patients. So we're not trying to go in there and compete head to head with the folks that today have the mechanical thrombectomy tools. We're really trying to, you know, build truly a blue ocean and go out there into the world and be able to give access to so many more people.
You know, the whole notion of empowering cardiologists to perform these procedures is remarkable, and I want to unpack that in a moment. But let's focus on your technology. There's a great video on your website, and I asked people to go check it out. What is it? Artijone, artedrone.com?
That's correct.
Okay. Artijone.com. Check it out. There's a great video that kind of shows how it works, but let's not force them to do that. They're listening to the podcast. Talk a bit about the tech, and I'd love to understand its origins a bit. Where was it invented? How was it developed?
Yeah. So essentially, the VC firm is called Truffle Capital that started this company. They go out and look for IP around the world. And that's really what they do. They look for IP and then they build businesses around IP that looks interesting. So it took quite a while to land on stroke being what they wanted to do, essentially with a magnetofluidic robot, micro robot. And so that was really the origins of the technology, is taking, you know, some IP that was out there around navigating with the use of propelling the microcatheter with both blood flow and then a magnet. And so they took that IP and they started looking at different areas that they may be able to apply it to. And in the end, the one that had a really big market need that we thought could be the biggest advantage and use of the technology was for this ischemic stroke treatment. And so, you know, they were looking at, can we use it in the liver? That doesn't work well with the blood flow that's there. Were they looking at hemorrhagic stroke? Is there something we can do to in that arena? And ultimately, it was, I think, in about 2020, they decided and nailed, you know, narrowed down the scope and said, okay, we're going to go after ischemic stroke. And we think that we have a potentially very viable option to be able to get us there and technology that we can use to do that.
So what is the tip part of this? So this does not use, and I'm not sure exactly how mechanical thrombectomies wind their way through the vasculature. I'm sure there's a bunch of knobs and dials and things that need to be kind of twisted this way and that. Does this not rely on any of that? This is brought up into the brain by blood flow, propelled by blood flow in some internal propelling device?
So there's no internal propelling.
Oh, okay.
This is what makes it really quite a unique technology. So the idea is that there is a little sort of magnetic suction cup at the end of a very, very flexible line. Uh-huh. And so you just have to know how far you need to go, and you kind of let it out. It's almost like a fishing line, right? You let it out, and as the water would push it, you know, your fishing line down.
Like you're trolling.
Yeah, exactly. You're trolling along. The blood flow will move the catheter to however far you want it to go, which for us is usually wherever there's a bifurcation. So when you need to steer it. So if it just needs to go through a vessel, the blood will propel it and push it to where you need it to go, because it's very flexible and just goes along. Then when you get a bifurcation, that's where we leverage the magnetic technology. And we come in with a magnet and we say, okay, do you want to go right? Do you want to go left? In very simplistic terms. Mm-hmm. We put the magnet closer to the head of the patient, and then it can push or pull the magnet, the tip of that catheter, in the direction that you want it to go. And once you know you're directed in the right way, then you can let it a little more line, and it will go into the next bifurcation. And so that's essentially how we do it. So even though the vessels can be very tortuous, if there's not a bifurcation, essentially the blood will push it along. And we've optimized now, you know, the properties of this very specialized catheter so that it can be pushed in the appropriate blood flow, even through tortuous vessels.
Interesting. Is the point of entry any different than a traditional mechanical thrombectomy? Is it? I'm not sure. Are those going through the neck or through the groin?
Usually through the groin. And so right now we're planning through the groin. So it's your normal standard access that, you know, all the interventional cardiologists and interventional neuroradiologists go through. And so you go through the groin. Again, you navigate up around the aorta and into the carotid artery. And then after that, we basically have positioned ourselves inside that access sheath, and we'll take over from there.
So when we talk about surgical robotics, I think people have a sense, although I think that the perception is changing, but a massive pile of equipment in an OR taking up all this space. I'm guessing this is not that from what you're describing. If you've got this flexible tip and a guidance magnet, it's probably something that is it. Talk about the size a bit, if you would, and how does it fit into the flow, the clinical flow of a hospital?
Yes. So today, how the system is set up is you will have some, you know, basically a catheter pusher, I guess I'll call it, just for simple terms, right? Uh-huh. To make sure that we're letting out the line appropriately. So that would sit on the table and is very small and compact. We do today have a larger robot, which the tip of that robot, there's an actuator on the end that's a magnet that comes in. So that part is a little bit bigger and would be a footprint similar, you know, to the orthopedic robots that are out there, but they're not. You know, there's other magnetic systems out there today, like a stereotaxis or something like that, that are, you know, you have to set up the whole room. And this is not like that. This is definitely a mobile system. And then you have your normal, what we're putting together, our own mechanical thrombectomy kit. But it doesn't have to be, you know, all the components don't have to now be managed by the interventionalist that's standing there.
Leanne, if you look at the video I referenced earlier, I see there's a digital twin component and sort of a whole kind of back office technical component of it. Walk us through to how this procedure is done.
Yeah, so all stroke patients end up having imaging that's done. So either an MRI or a CT that's done to understand exactly the location of that clot within the brain vasculature. So what we do is once we get that image, we can essentially create a copy of that or a digital twin of the patient to understand exactly, again, where that clot is and upload it into our system. And then pretty much just like a, you know, a GPS, and you get your roadmap of exactly where you want to go and what you might bump into and where the sharp turns are. We essentially create that plan for where we want our microcatheter to go. So we know exactly where the clot is. We create that plan on how far between each bifurcation we have, and then understand where we may need to bring in the magnet to be able to steer the catheter to where we want it to go. And so that's essentially it on that back end component. And then you have the interventionalist that will take that microcatheter, we guide it to the carotid artery, and then they can push the button, and through that GPS map and the propelling of the blood, we can get the little microcatheter and the suction cup that's on the end of it navigated through the brain vasculature to the clot. We can anchor to the clot, and then we can pull it back.
So is the path sort of pre-programmed before you start? I mean, as it reaches that fork in the road, for lack of a better term, has the magnet already sort of, has it been determined what the magnet will do at that point to get the tip to the next stage?
That's exactly right. You perfectly described it. So we have this preset plan that we have built, and again, it acts as that GPS. So you know how far you need to have the micro robot pushed by the blood. And at the bifurcation, we know exactly where the magnet needs to be positioned to either push or pull the catheter in the right direction to take the right road. And then it continues along that exact same path. We also know where the clot will be. And you can, if it needs to get updated within the case, because oftentimes the clot will move just a little bit, we can understand that. You know, we have a lot of backend imaging that we've done and AI that comes into play here to understand some of those, the image guidance that we do within the case, anchor to the clot. And then again, it's pretty tough with this microcatheter. And one of the, you know, things I'm extremely proud of the team about is that it has to, the catheter itself has to be extremely flexible, as we talked about, to be able to reach that clot location, but then also needs to be extremely strong and have the right vacuum and suction capabilities once you get to the clot to be able to pull it back. So it's almost opposing antagonist, you know, mechanical properties that are happening there. And I think that, you know, that's where some of this, like, the special sauce comes in on what the company is doing.
I was wondering about that as well in terms of the return trip. Is that all propelled by whatever let the line out is now pulling the line in, the reel, for lack of a better term?
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Interesting. So let's talk a bit about product development and design. Where is the product in its engineering and in its development?
So we have sort of completed all of our proof of concept. We are now in through our feasibility studies and preclinical work. So we just released a press release talking about some of those preclinical results. That the tagline there is essentially extremely successful. And I can't talk more about the very specifics of the results because the data are under embargo for publication. Okay. So, but the bottom line is that that's essentially where we are. Now we're working on our first in human and getting prepared for those trials.
What have you, how is this being looked at? Is this being treated as clinically or regulatory wise as just another thrombectomy sort of device, or does it have a special pathway? How is it being looked at by the FDA?
Yeah, right now we're anticipating a de novo 510K.
Based on what, so what would be the predicate for this?
So there's a handful, like we said, of essentially magnetic guided catheters that are out there on the market. And so that's what we're hoping for. There's still, you know, a lot of work to do ahead there, but, you know, again, super exciting.
That's great. So we're now moving forward to sort of manufacturing and commercialization. Ultimately, obviously you're not there yet, but strategy wise, where is your open? You're saying you're not going after traditional stroke centers, probably in most big cities, but are you looking more at a rural strategy? Where does this, where do you see opportunity?
Yeah, so we'll definitely, you know, take the opportunity as needed with interventional neuroradiologists and some of these level one stroke centers to make sure, you know, we're getting it right and having as part of our clinical study, certainly some of those level one stroke centers, but our broader sort of market plan. And I think, again, the key value proposition around the technology and what we're really trying to do is to go much broader than that. So we will absolutely be looking at those level two stroke centers who already really know how to manage these stroke patients. But largely what happens with those patients is that, you know, they've been brought in, you know, by an ambulance in an emergency setting, obviously, and they're evaluated and they've got a neuro team that they can call on to evaluate the patient to understand what kind of stroke they have had. And then they either just get put on thrombolysis or they get put on thrombolysis and get shipped off to a level one center. So now they've already had to make a stop and it takes all this extra time. And we know that time is of the essence when you have a stroke, right? They're just killing the brain tissue. And so if you can now intervene at the level two stroke center and not have to pass them off to the level one stroke center, or to your point, in those very rural settings where you're not getting to a level one stroke center, you know, it's a several hour flight or drive, or, and you just know that it's just not a great outcome for that patient. And so we would really like to be able to intervene there. And then as you go broader than that, if this really, you know, we can get the adoption, then we can start looking at those cardiac care centers as well.
So where do you see this sort of, we talked about the interventionalist cardiologist being able to move into this. How do you see that sort of playing out? I mean, there's been instances where when technology has created an opportunity for one specialty to sort of provide treatment to another specialty, there's been sort of some tug of war, some back and forth between specialties. But there, as you noted, there's a shortage of specialists who can handle this. Have you any indication from the clinical world as to how this concept will be received, or is that something that you're still sort of vetting? Or
so it really depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
I do think that the bottom line is that there will be some politics involved without a doubt, right?
Yep.
Most physicians don't want to give up their patients, which is completely understandable, of course not. And so I think that we will have some pushback from interventional neuroradiologists in certain centers. And so we will look to obviously try to bridge that. I think our ultimate goal is to have the interventional cardiologist and the interventional neuroradiologist be able to really work together, mm-hmm. and to understand, you know, that this is going to be for the greater good. And there's already been some test cases that have been done in France that show that when you open up new centers, which typically takes a very long time, because like we talked about before, the training to get these experts up to speed and the centers up to speed on what really needs to happen is a long period of time. But if those new centers, as they've been opened, they essentially, there's no loss of patients from that stroke level one center. There's just that many patients out there today that are not being treated. Uh-huh. And so what they've seen is that even with opening two new centers in an area where there was just one before, so now you have three, the level one stroke center did not lose patients, and the level two stroke centers immediately, you know, got bumped up to several patients within even that first year, you know, in the close to 100 patients in each center each year. And from there, it continued to grow. And actually, we treated a third more patients overall.
Wow.
Within a couple of years. And so I think that once we get more data that can demonstrate that you're actually not going to lose patients, we are just going to help so many more people that have a stroke and look at it from, again, bring data, you know, and demonstrate that, I think we're going to be in really great shape.
And now, and I think you're right. I mean, I think if you're helping people who aren't getting help, you like to think it's going to be the deciding factor. So let's certainly hope that's the case. To that point, this would seem to be sort of an ideal platform for telesurgery, telepresence, something that can be done remotely. Is that part of the strategy?
It actually isn't part of our strategy. I know there are others out there that are working on that today. But the bottom line is that in those sort of telehealth, telemedicine strategies, you still need the expert hands there. Mm-hmm. And so it's not only about having expert hands. This is about where you can do the procedure and have new people to perform it. And so there, you still have this bottleneck with the number of people and their availability. And they're, by the way, on stroke, it's like not like you can stack patients and decide to do them all on Friday, right? Or something
right.
That. You it's a 24/7 job for all of these people. And so, you know, having more people that are just on call and able to perform the procedure is really our ultimate goal. So that does diverge a little bit from others out there that are working on technologies like this.
Yeah, now I hear your answer. I guess I withdraw my question, because you're right. It's actually the opposite. The telesurgery is saying, look, we have an expert here, we have a system there, and we're going to allow the expert here to work with the system there. What you're saying is we're going to put a system there that makes the person there.
Correct.
Enough of an expert to get this done. So you don't need
that
remote connection. Very cool.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Right.
So how do you see this sort of, what are your next steps? And talk a bit about, if you would, as we close out, financing, financial stuff, all that icky stuff that no one wants to talk about,
but yeah.
keeps the lights on and the product moving forward.
That's right. Well, like I said, I'm really happy to, you know, be working with Truffle Capital, and, you know, their support has been phenomenal. We're doing additional rounds of funding. So I'm out there, you know, kind of on the circuit now, which is a fun new thing for me as I've, you know, moved into this startup world. That's certainly a different environment than when I was sitting on the strategic side and always evaluating these technologies that were coming to me. Now I'm the one, you know, knocking on the doors. But it's been great, because again, it's just technology that I really believe in, you know, and so that makes it really easy to go out there and talk to people about it. And everyone really gets it. You know, this is life changing. This is game changing. This is going to change the standard of care. And I think that, you know, if you talk about, again, this blue ocean market, I'm not trying to go in and compete against what's already out there. I just want to make sure that the patients that need the treatment have access to the treatment.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, when you're going out there and talking to people, they really get that and they want to help. And so that's, you know, what we're really looking at. We're looking at Series B funding right now, and you know, that can take us through our first in human and beyond.
I mean, there's obviously a very large neurovascular company out there that's talked about moving into robotics. It rhymes with Piker, but we won't any names there. But there would seem to be a lot of opportunity for you to engage with people who sat in the seat that you once sat in, the corporate types. Do you expect that to be part of your strategy? And you can decline to answer the question if you want.
Yeah, I mean, again, if folks are interested and, you know, are as passionate as, you know, the folks at our company are in this space, then, you know, I'll talk to anyone that's like that, right? That yep. really wants to help. That's the bottom line.
Very cool. Well, it's exciting stuff. It's important stuff. The stroke market, like as you indicated, the more you unpack and the more you see the stats, the less safe you feel. And the bigger opportunity you see for like, oh my God, this is a problem that needs to be fixed. So thanks for taking this problem on, Lee, and thanks for joining us on the podcast as well.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks weekly podcast. Don't forget to register for our upcoming Device Talks Tuesdays. Happening on Tuesday, May 20th, brought to you by Nelson Labs. And of course, join us at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. You can register for that at minnesota.devicetalks.com. Use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. Go to that same website, minnesota.devicetalks.com, to check out the really, really great agenda. And once again, it's a limited space. So I hope you'll join us, but don't sleep on this, because we've got great numbers going in, and we know it's going to be a great day for MedTech folks. That's it, folks. Thanks again for listening to this podcast. Don't forget to share this episode on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect with Chris Newmarker on LinkedIn. Connect with Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn. Of course, follow Device Talks and Mass Device as well. And make sure you subscribe to our great and growing Device Talks podcast network. Take care, everybody.